Blog Talk Radio. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to On the Line with CWLA, Speaking for America's Children. I'm your host, Linda Spears, and I want to thank you all for joining us today. Before I introduce our guest this afternoon, I want to give our regular instructions out to the callers on the line so that they know how to keep in touch with us. If you are interested and have any questions or comments for our guest today, please call 347-326-9411. That's 347-326-9411. We know that many of you will call in today just because it's easier to listen over the phone from wherever you're located, and we are glad you are able to join us. Some of you may have a comment or a question to make during the course of the show, and we want to be sure that you get a chance to do that. So if you do, just hit 1 on your telephone keypad. That allows your phone number to come up on the screen, and we'll know that you're interested in speaking with our guests. Be sure that your phone is on mute, and we will call on you. So if you're, you know, just hang in there. We'll call on you when we get a break, and we will say your phone number so that you will know that you're the person that we're calling on. Again, thanks for joining us. This afternoon we have a terrific show on national medical standards for girls in detention. Girls have been one of the fastest-growing segments of the juvenile justice population, and many of the girls in this population suffer from one or more serious physical or mental health problems. Yet we know that there are no established medical guidelines for screening, for assessment, and for treatment of these problems, or any comprehensive research that talks about the healthcare needs of this fast-growing population of girls. Detention facilities have often, you know, traditionally been designed and serve young men who have different health needs than women and girls, and particularly related to reproductive health and sexual abuse. And we know that we need to do some things to pay attention to these services. This real critical gap in juvenile correctional health services is currently being addressed by a new project called the National Girls Health Screening Project that's being conducted and led by Ms. Leslie Akoka. Leslie has been working in collaboration with the Juvenile Law Center and Children's Hospital in Philadelphia on this three-phase project that's designed to identify and prioritize the health problems of girls ages 10 to 17 who are in detention. Leslie is the executive director of the National Girls Health and Justice Institute and founding director of In Our Daughters' Hands, Inc., a California-based organization dedicated to promoting physical and mental health of girls, particularly those who are in or at risk of entering child welfare and juvenile justice systems. We've known Leslie here at the Child Welfare League of America for quite some time, and she has devoted her entire career to working on these issues. We are really delighted that she's able to join us today to share her expertise and tell us a little bit about the work that she's doing. Leslie, welcome to the show.
I'm really honored to be here. Thank you so much.
That's quite okay. Leslie, I want to start with our guest just talking a little bit about the girls that we're talking about. Who are these young ladies, and what do we know about their health needs, their mental health needs, and the issues that they are bringing that their numbers are increasing in detention and other facilities?
There's been a historic trend over the past 20 years that we've noted that increasing numbers of girls are entering all phases of the juvenile justice system, particularly detention. Across the country, there are almost 2 million children who enter some form of juvenile justice residential facility per year. And about a quarter of those are young women. And mm-hmm. we know from previous studies that 85 to 95% of these young women have between one and three serious physical and or mental health issues. And until recently, they really hadn't been identified or prioritized in a systematic way as girls entered these systems, which has been leading to inadequate treatment, sometimes behavior problems in facilities, inadequate pre-release planning, and a complete disconnect between detention health care and community health care.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Girls Health Screen Project was really developed to create the first step in a seamless continuum of care for the fastest growing population of young women. And they tend to be younger than their male counterparts. They tend to be in the juvenile justice system for less significant reasons. And their health problems are significantly different, as we discovered when we did the validation study for the Girls Health Screen,
mm-hmm.
which is now a computerized questionnaire.
Wow. So you were able to look through the – tell us a little bit about the process that you came to sort of know the difference between the health needs of the girls and the boys and what the data is that you've been able to collect through the health screen instrument.
Well, it has been a very long process. I hope that we've paved the way to make it a little easier for other organizations to do health research within the juvenile justice system. This was really the first medical research looking at, both objectively and in terms of self-report, the medical needs, not just the psychological needs, but the physical health needs of
mm-hmm.
either detained girls or boys. So ultimately, this should have implications for boys as well. But the first thing that we did was to do a national review of the medical files of girls in the juvenile justice system, because there weren't even any instruments that we could rely on from which to draw the questions for the questionnaire that we eventually turned into the Girls Health Screen. And we discovered many very significant problems in the medical case file review. One of the most stunning to me, which has been borne out through this later validation study of the Girls Health Screen, is the rate of sexual victimization, serious sexual victimization. We discovered during the medical case file review that we did in 2004 that 98% of the girls, and this is through medical files, not self-report, 98%
wow.
of the girls had a history of sexual victimization or assault.
That's in phenomenal. That's
yes.
just an outrageous number, Leslie.
It is. And, you know, I think that we have to really look increasingly at sexual victimization as
mm-hmm.
a primary health problem. There are many other problems that came up during the Girls Health Screen. But, for example, during the recent Girls Health Screen study, we discovered that 22% of the girls had a history of forced sexual contact,
mm-hmm.
and that was self-report. But then when the doctors did the physical examination, which we used to validate or check the girls' self-report answers, we discovered that 42% had some form of abnormal vaginal or anal tearing or problem, which really does indicate some form of sexual injury.
Right, and it sounds like the girls then are not necessarily willing to report what has been, what their real experience has been.
Absolutely. And
yeah.
when we ask the doctors and nurses who administer the Girls Health Screen in these detention facilities,
mm-hmm.
The Girls Health Screen was tested in three facilities across the country. And when we asked them what they felt about the Girls Health Screen, one of the things that they said is that it enabled the girls to report their histories of victimization really for the first time because it was private to them. Usually
yeah.
when girls are locked up, they are asked a series of questions by a correctional officer or by a nurse, and it's, you know, a verbal interchange. We
right.
didn't
and
realize...
That feels Yeah, that sounds like that's very, I mean, that would feel very risky, I would imagine, for you, some of the young women.
Well, I was surprised because I thought that a computerized questionnaire might feel a little impersonal to them. But what we discovered is that the girls actually give very accurate answers and reports, and it enables detention facilities to respond immediately to the girls' answers on issues like sexual assault. And the nurses and the facility directors told us that that was one of the great values of the screen. Other key health problems that emerged that surprised us are, for example, infectious and communicable diseases like tuberculosis.
Wow. Hang on just a second, Leslie. Before we continue, I'd like to just, because I know you've got a lot we want to get in, and I have some questions, and I know you have things, but I want to just remind our guests for just a moment that they can join us by hitting 1 on their keypad and making sure that they are not our listeners, and make sure they're not on mute, so that if our listeners would like to weigh in, ask Leslie a question, just hit 1 on your keypad and make sure that you are not on mute. Thanks. And Leslie, let's go back to the question that you were talking about in terms of the other the findings that you were seeing, that like tuberculosis and other health concerns that you were finding around infectious disease. Love to hear a little bit more about that.
Well, we found that 9 girls out of 119 tested positive TB, and only had a positive history of TB, and only 4 reported having chest X-rays. And the detention system poses significant challenges to healthcare providers because kids may come in and out very quickly.
Exactly.
You know, they may come in and be there for an hour, or they may be there for 2 weeks, or they may be there for 3 months. But it really does argue for a more seamless continuum of care and early identification of health problems. Mm-hmm. Another thing that we found, just a couple of things that I just think detention centers will be so grateful to discover early, is that 41% of the girls on intake reported serious allergies to food prescriptions or over-the-counter medications. And yet
Go ahead.
None had EpiPens with them.
Oh, wow.
What that means, you know, because everything is taken from them when they enter a facility. But that's a huge problem for facilities and for the girls. You know, if a girl is allergic to fish and they give her a tuna sandwich in the facility, it's a disaster.
I mean, that seems to me it would just give them the opportunity to provide, you know, sort of basic to avert healthcare crises in the facility that otherwise they find themselves at, you know, both risk for the child, the young woman, and at risk in the facility for not being able to respond and get someone to medical care quickly enough.
Absolutely. It was really one of the rationales for this study, in addition to the burgeoning numbers of girls pushing through the system, for which the system is completely unprepared, as far as I can tell. Also, the lack of medical standards for all youth in detention, but particularly girls, is really, I think, shocking. When I tell people in other countries that there are this many children with no established medical standards under state care, they really can't believe it. A recent study done by Kathy Gallagher, national study, discovered that there were roughly 3,500 juvenile justice facilities across the country holding these young children, boys and girls, and only 53 of them had any kind of medical accreditation. And
unbelievable, Leslie.
It's just hard to even fathom that only 53 have that. I want to let everybody know today that our guest is Leslie Akoka, who is really here talking to us about the National Girls Health Screening Project, a really innovative activity that's taken place, and Leslie can tell us the cities across the country to really understand and address the health care needs and mental health care needs of young girls 10 to 17 who are in the juvenile justice system. Leslie, I just want to make sure that people understand our topic today. But anyway, tell us a little bit more about the standards portion of the initiative, because I think this is critical in terms of making the kind of changes in healthcare that you're talking about need to be happening.
Well, first of all, we really don't have credible intake data on the health needs of girls or boys. The intake instruments are not standardized. This is the first attempt to do that, and I understand why it hasn't been done before, because it took us 6 years to do it. It's
right.
A very, very difficult, very difficult process. But we can't have what President Obama has called for, which is a streamlined system with effective electronic medical records, if we don't start somewhere. And this really is the first attempt. And I really think that we have to bypass the paper pencil versions of health screenings, because we just can't gather the information effectively without electronic screening. And it enables kids to be private, be confidential. And frankly, kids under 18 are electronic savvy in a way that we're not.
I just know from the kids that we all know that they're far more comfortable to sit down and do things on a computer that none of us would want to do, including sharing of information in a way around the health screening. And it seems to me that the health screening portion, the health screen instrument being online and on a system, would help with the sort of the community connectedness that you talked about, creating the continuity of care as well.
It's really essential. And I think that another thing that was very important was that this instrument is gender responsive.
Mm-hmm.
It really does respond to the specific healthcare needs of girls. There could also be a boys' health screen that could respond to the specific healthcare needs of boys, but girls have been traditionally very seriously underserved. Boys have two, but it's a good place to start with girls. Additionally, the way the screen works in facilities, or should work ideally, is that the moment a girl comes in, she should have the girl's health screen, answer the questions. Her answers to the questions then get printed out and put in her medical file. Ideally, a healthcare professional, usually a nurse practitioner, will perform a physical exam, and we designed our own physical exam, which is a pretty good one. And then that data is entered so that you have the girl's health screen data, the physical examination data, and then ideally that would inform the pre-release medical passport for that child before she enters the community. Right now, that's not happening. And as a result, serious issues like tuberculosis or allergies or sexually transmitted infections are not being identified and treated in a timely fashion. And I have to say that one of the things that has gratified us the most is that the correctional facilities in Philadelphia, San Diego, and Santa Cruz were so phenomenally cooperative in helping us do this study. We haven't had any real resistance to performing what was a really challenging activity for them as well.
Leslie, I have a question for you regarding sort of the connection to the health passport piece, but I want to remind our listeners again that they can ask questions or have a comment for Leslie by hitting the number 1 on their telephone keypad if you want to do that. I see we have several folks on the line who are there, and if you're listening in, great. If you want to let us know a question that you have or an idea that you have or a thought that you had regarding this, please hit 1 and we will come to your attention. Leslie, you talked about Health Passport, and I know a lot of folks in the field know what that is, but how does this system how does the Health Passport work in a way that will connect it to this system that happens that you're looking to have happen inside the detention facility?
Well, I think there's an idea of a health passport. I don't know that there's a reality yet. Uh-huh. You can't have a health passport for kids, health, and community juvenile detention programs if you don't know precisely what their medical problems are. I have to be very honest about that. Mm-hmm. It can't be anecdotal. And what the Girls Health Queen provides is a first step, validated screen that self-report, followed by a qualified physical exam that then corroborates and follows up on the problems that the girls identify. And then, ideally, that would create the basis for a health passport. Those elements have not been linked up yet. Let me just give you another example.
Sure.
Nearly 30% of the girls who took the girls health screen and later had a physical exam needed but did not have eyeglasses.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. We have to be able to follow up on these issues. They have huge implications for functioning in school, functioning in the community. Another really key issue is the amount of substance abuse that's going on that is not identified in a credible way and followed up on. In both the 2004 study and this new study, the validation for the Girls Health Screen 2009, we discovered that substance abuse was one of the most pressing, life-threatening problems that girls faced nationwide. And in the states where we were operating, can you guess how many intensive substance abuse treatment programs for girls there were?
Zero. Yeah, that
None.
Would be my guess. None. Yeah, because most of them are, you know, unfortunately, we have not attended to the treatment needs of young people at all who have substance abuse problems. We are often putting these kids in either psychiatric facilities or hoping that they're old enough to go into an adult program.
Well, the adult program that they often go into is an adult prison.
Yeah.
If these issues are not dealt with, the fastest growing segment of the juvenile justice population, which is girls, becomes the fastest growing segment of the adult justice population. And there's another issue that very few people talk about, because we tend to view children who are detained as separate from their families and from their communities. But a very significant percent of them are already mothers.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a next generation that we are failing to protect right now today. And so we really get a twofer when we identify the health needs of girls, because we help their children as well.
Yeah, and failure to do so puts their children in incredible risk of not having a family failure, of a mom who's not going to be able to be there for them because she's not getting what she needs, and then those children being, you know, having the separation loss issues and other issues of bouncing around in our system, increasing the likelihood that they're going to have the same horrible experiences that some of their moms did. Leslie, one of the things that really this work is just so incredibly important. It just seems to me that one of the key things that you would want to be doing as you roll this out in facilities is to looking at how we can take these standards and this screening process and really begin to institutionalize it in juvenile detention and institutionalize and sort of routinize the connections between this and the community-based healthcare systems for girls. What's the strategy that you're looking at to accomplish that?
Well, that's a really good question, because we are just beginning to roll this out, as luck would have it, this week.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just exactly the right question to ask. We have two thoughts on that, and this will be the purview of the National Girls Health and Justice Institute, which we've created to roll this out and to mm-hmm. promote the health care of girls in the juvenile justice system and the child welfare system. Number one is that we hope to draw on the successes of the MACI, which is the mental health screening counterpart for right. the girls' health screen, and make the girls' health screen widely accessible to detention centers with training that goes along with it, and possibly some data feedback system so that they would send us the data, a detention center in, for example, San Diego or Los Angeles or mm-hmm. Philadelphia, would send us the data from their health screen, and then we would be able to develop a national database on the kids, and ultimately we would hope refine the instrument based on the data that we get. So that's one strategy. But my dream would be to have between 1 and 3 demonstration sites across the country, starting pretty quickly,
mm-hmm.
to link up the girls' health screen with medical treatment in facilities and community health treatment, so that there's a seamless continuum that starts with an effective identification and prioritization of medical problems of girls. So we could really test the linkages between screening, physical examination, pre-release planning, and I never call aftercare, I call it ongoing care.
Right.
And so that would be our preferred additional strategy, because mm-hmm. we want to see this work. We'd like a real health passport.
Absolutely. Well, it makes a lot of sense to me that you know, that this is the direction you're going. Do you think that there are sort of legislative things that people can do to sort of embed this in policy and law? And what kind of resources do you think that this will take in terms of how facilities change the way they do the work? Is this an expensive thing to do? Is it something that you think can be done at modest cost, at least within the detention facilities?
Well, that's always the question that people ask, is what will the cost be? And I think that there are significant cost savings that can be drawn down eventually, because we'll be able to assist facilities to access funding streams that often are not adequately accessed. There is a fairly advanced medical program in Alameda County, California, that accesses funding streams like victim witness funds and mm-hmm. a variety of funding mechanisms that are already in place to support its healthcare delivery system. I think that we could assist facilities to do that. I think initially installing a screening process that's electronic and validated, it has a little bit of upfront cost, and it also carries with it a responsibility to treat the problems that you identify.
Absolutely. There's just no way that you can really take this on and learn about the healthcare needs of these young ladies without taking responsibility to respond. Leslie, we're getting close to our wrap-up time. I wanted to just make sure that if anybody wanted to reach you and get information, that we had a website or contact information about how they can find more about the project. And I'm hoping that folks are listening in who would be interested in replicating this in their community. Is there a website or an address that they can find to reach the get project information?
Well, helping people do that, I would like to first of all thank the Stoneleigh Foundation in Philadelphia, without which this project would not be reaching the finish line. They are
That's
a very
right.
unusual group, and really they have been key in bringing this last phase of the research and the beginning dissemination forward. So reaching the Stoneley Center, their website is a good one currently. Ours is under construction.
Unfortunately, we've got to run, Leslie. I want to thank you very much for joining us today and for joining on the line with CWLA. Please feel free to give us your comments, your program suggestions, etc. My name is Linda Spears. I want to thank you for listening, and I want to thank Leslie for being a guest this afternoon. I look forward to seeing everyone next week.